You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So, the Corinthian heart was askew. You probably know this, but behavior flows from the stance your heart takes. Whatever position you have in your heart, that's what your behavior is. And for them, if you just looked at their behavior, you would see there's a group of people that's involved in a lot of social maneuvering. They're trying to associate with people they think are honorable. They are dismissing people they think are dishonorable. And of course, this is a church with people who run the gamut from slaves all the way to the aristocrats. And so there's a lot of social maneuvering, a lot of selfishness. That's because their heart was concerned with honor from people. And their heart was concerned with pleasing self. I know a lot about both of these things, just from personal experience. Our heart can also become askew, can it? Our heart can shift from wanting honor from people and to pleasing ourselves. I think almost every home church I go to, my heart is devoted to pleasing myself. And so we have to be aware of our hearts. We have to keep reorienting our hearts. It's like a car with bad steering, a bad alignment. We have to keep reorienting to the right thing. Well, if this was your heart instead, if in your heart you thought, as we talked about a few weeks ago, you know, my central concern is pleasing God. That's my central concern. If that's what your heart was, and if your heart was concerned about loving others, guess what would happen? You would try to do things that pleased him. You would think through, you know, coming here today, you would wonder, I wonder what will please God today. I wonder if there's a way I could serve someone else today. That's the kind of behavior that comes out of a heart that wants to honor Christ and serve others. And so Paul will kick off this part of the letter by just reading what Paul said. He said, but in the following instructions, I cannot praise you, for it sounds as if more harm than good is done when you meet together. Paul's saying their meetings were so bad that it might have been better to not meet at all. Have you ever been in a group like that? I've contributed to a group like that. It's awful. First, I hear there are divisions among you when you meet as a church, and to some extent, I believe it. So there's divisions. There are some people associating with some and some associating with others and not connecting with each other. But there's a particular quality to this division, and it's this. Do you really want to shame the poor? Oh, these divisions are along the line of class. I was at Central Teaching last week, and someone walked by, and the smell of body odor was overwhelming. I was not interested in following them to talk with them, right? Why? Because they offend me, my sensitive sense of smell. And so, you know, we see people that are dressed poorly, maybe we tend to move toward them because we grew up in an environment like that. We see people that are dressed well, we tend to maybe move away from them because we were never raised in an environment like that, or flip the script. We tend to move toward people that we are like. We like people that we're like. And that's what they were doing, except these divisions were along the line of class. And so the slaves that came in, the people of low reputation that came in, had to sort of mingle amongst themselves because the people that were more well-off did not want to spend time with them. And so this is really the context, this verse, is the context for his entire challenge. He says, when you meet together, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. Ostensibly, they were meeting to eat the Lord's Supper, but Paul's like, that is not what you're doing. What you're doing is nothing like the Lord's Supper. So we're going to be talking about the Lord's Supper, but we're mainly going to be talking about the heart today. Their heart, our heart. For some of you hurry to eat your own meal without sharing with others. As a result, some go hungry while others get drunk. Now, you can sort of imagine this. If you're more well off, if your household's being run largely by servants and slaves, then maybe you're going to go to this meeting a little early, and you're going to have your picnic basket that you carry with you, that your slave put together for you, and your jug of wine, and you go with all of your other rich friends, and you just chow down. And you're eating, and you're drinking, and you see some poor people start to come in, so you start shoveling it in faster. This is a culture that had a building called a vomitorium, where you would eat and eat and eat and eat until you're so stuffed you had to go throw up so you could go back and eat some more. Yeah, we're not like that. We just eat until we almost feel like we're going to vomit, and we stop just shy of that. What? Don't you have your own homes for eating and drinking? Or do you really want to disgrace God's church and shame the poor? What am I supposed to say? Do you want me to praise you? I certainly do not praise you for this. A little stern. And so if our heart is to serve others and honor Christ, then we do serve others. That's one of our behaviors. That was not their behavior. They didn't want to serve others. They didn't care about others. They cared about themselves. They were forming cliques along class lines. They were keeping food from the poor. Can you imagine? I can. I've got a home church where we have meal before home church. Tonight's home church, there'll be a meal before home church. And we take turns supplying food. And some crews supply lots of food. And some bring like a dish about this big to serve 30 people. Right, that's their contribution. And then some people just love to eat. And so they arrive early and they have these plates that are just groaning with food. And then our guests show up and there's nothing left because the providers underprovided and the hogs hogged. It's awful. It's awful. My wife and I usually eat a little bit at home so that we're not tempted to overdo it. And that's sort of what Paul's going to encourage them to do too. This is not how it's supposed to be for us. I want to go back to the Old Testament because a lot of times we think about the law and we think, oh, rules, bad rules, you know. But the law in its heart was the law of love. And here's something from Deuteronomy chapter 14 and 15:4. Now, when the Lord your God blesses you with a good harvest, you're supposed to bring a tenth of that before the Lord. Buy any kind of food you want, cattle, sheep, goats, wine, other strong drink, and then feast there in the presence of the Lord your God and celebrate with your household. Well, that sounds exactly what we would like to do. Oh, we're forgetting something. And do not neglect the Levite. The Levites didn't have land. They didn't harvest crops. Their food depended on the generosity of other people. Their job was to serve the Lord at the temple. And so don't forget to share with them. Oh, and also the foreigners living among you. We live in a culture and time where we're afraid of the foreigners. But God calls on them to love the foreigners by sharing food with them. The orphans, there was no social security. The social security was the community was social security. And the widows, again, no social security. The community was the social security in your town. So they can eat and be satisfied. Then the Lord your God will bless you in all your work. He's like, I'm watching. I am watching. There should be no poor among you. So you can imagine that the heart of the law is love, and it's manifest this way. So, of course, Paul was horrified that this was going on. This is exactly the opposite. Let's move to the New Testament. And the interesting thing about the passage I'm going to be citing is this is one of the accounts of the Passover meal. This is one of the accounts of what became the Lord's Supper. It was instituted this night. And so on this night, they had a Passover meal. At the end of the meal, Jesus took wine and he took bread and he began to describe what was about to happen. Before the meal, he washed everyone's feet. And they were like aghast because he was their leader and yet he was acting like their servant. And then he had dinner with them. And then he tells them he's about to create a path toward reconciliation with God by dying for sin. And so he said, and we'll read this in our text a little later, he takes the bread and says, "This is my body, which is broken for you. This is my blood, which is shed for you." And he's letting them know that he's creating a pathway to God, what the Old Testament calls a new covenant. And this is the new covenant. And so he's going to die for sin. And he also says that he's going to be betrayed. Can you imagine? Your master washes your feet. You have a meal together. You're chatting. You're enjoying each other's company. He does this demonstration with bread and wine to illustrate what's about to happen. He says he's going to be betrayed. And briefly, around the table, they're like, "Who's going to betray him? It's not me. But very quickly, the conversation became, "Who's greatest amongst us?" Oh my God. Can you believe it? If I were Jesus, this would be my posture. After all this time, after all this instruction, after all this demonstration, but Jesus is remarkably patient. He's remarkably patient. What he did, even though he had hell in front of him, was continue to instruct them. And it's like one passage says of Jesus, having loved them, he loved them to the very end. This is service. If I were going to die tonight, my interest in loving people would be extremely low. His was not. He said to them, "In this world, the kings and great men lord it over their people. Among you, it will be different. Those who are greatest among you should take the lowest rank, and the leader should be like a servant. I am among you as one who serves." For yet another reason, Paul would have been horrified at the behavior of this church. And so he continues. "So, my dear brothers and sisters, when you gather for the Lord's Supper, wait for each other." What does that mean? Give people time to get food, especially the poor. Make sure they get some food to eat. Wait, slow down, eat at home. You know, have some avocado toast there and then come to the meeting. If you're really hungry, eat at home so you won't bring judgment upon yourselves when you meet together. Oh, no, this is sounding a little more serious. This doesn't sound like an option, does it? It sounds like God's watching. And so I think if I were going to think about this a little more broadly, not just about a meal, not just about the Lord's Supper, I would think the way we're supposed to gather together is we gather with the intention of initiating with people we do not know. Okay, that's not eating food. That's not holding back from food. But the broader concern that I think is being expressed here is when you show up, do you show up to serve? A lot of times we show up to meetings on autopilot. We don't participate. We just sit quietly and, you know, think about our own thoughts. I got to move that lilac bush when I get home. That's going to be a bear. Shallow relating. We talk about sports. We talk about grandkids. We talk about projects at home. Don't take it any further. Before the meeting, we certainly don't go to God and say to him, "How can I honor you and serve others when I gather today?" Some of you did, I think, before you came here, but probably a lot of us didn't. How can I serve? You know, in their case, they were bringing nothing to share. In our case, a lot of times when we gather, we bring nothing to share. Not a word, not a casserole. Not a smile. Our gifts sort of are going to be all over the place. I would frankly prefer to show up with food because that's how I like to serve. But I've got someone in my group who, when you walk in the door, she has such a smile. It's infectious. You feel so welcome. You feel so seen. That's what she brings. Another person, I hardly ever see him smile. He's got the flattest affect I've ever seen. But he knows everything that's happened to you. He knows more about my life than I do. Because I, you know, he's like, oh, what about this? And I'm like, what? Yeah, you said this and this and this like 3 weeks ago, but I've completely forgotten what I said. But he brings his awareness of people's lives. Boy, I hope he never gets Alzheimer's, because what a blessing he is to us. Do you linger with folks who are not like you? It's always tempting to drift toward people you just like hanging out with. I've got a group of lads that I love hanging out with. They're fun, they're funny, we poke each other all the time. We have lots of things in common that we're interested in. And then there's this guy, like an intellectual, he pontificates all the time. You know, there's a lot, so many things about him I don't like. And I'm like, will I sit down and honor him? Will I sit down and get to know him and understand his world? This is what a servant does. Do you show up to a gathering with a plan to discern someone's needs and to help meet their needs? Are you that alert when you're around people that you're listening for something you might be able to do to bless them? Are you willing to sacrifice your pleasure and your comfort for theirs? You know, I'd rather sit in this chair and they're over there. I think I'll just stay here. Or will I go over here where it's less comfortable? Will I load up my plate until it's groaning? Or will I just take a little so there's enough for the people who arrive a little bit late? Or, well, do I show up late to meetings and disrupt the meeting and communicate by my behavior, this time just doesn't matter? It's not important. Well, Paul goes on to say this, for I pass on to you what I received from the Lord himself. And here we're going to have a reiteration of what Jesus did at the first Lord's Supper. On the night he was betrayed, the Lord Jesus took some bread and gave thanks to God for it. And when he broke it in pieces, he said, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. So this night, it was a picture of what was about to happen. But from this point forward, it's going to be a memorial of what did happen. This is why it's called the Lord's Supper. It's just one of two rituals prescribed for Christians. He took a cup of wine after supper and said, this cup is the new covenant between God and his people, an agreement confirmed with my blood. Do this in remembrance of me as often as you drink it. How often should you do this? Doesn't specify. And why am I even bringing this up? Because this ritual has become so formalistic that it has lost its very heart. The heart is to honor God. And now it's become, are we doing this in the right manner? Do you notice Paul brings up the bread first and then the wine? One of the other accounts of this night brings up the wine first and then the bread. Which do you do, the bread first or the wine first? It doesn't matter. What matters is, are you honoring God? Are you remembering his sacrifice? For every time you eat this bread and drink this cup, you're announcing the Lord's death until he comes again. So this is a memorial that allows us to reflect on what he's done and anticipate what he's about to do. Should we have one cup that we pass around? Or should we have little cups, each of us get a little cup? Should it be grape juice or should it be wine? Should it be one loaf or a lot of little loaves? Should it be crackers? The heart of formalism is this. There are churches that teach that if you take communion and you haven't confessed your sin, you will go to hell. This is a memorial about not going to hell, and now it's become a ritual that will send you to hell. Human beings just love to nitpick about stuff like this, don't they? And they gut the heart and the purpose of the communion. So we are supposed to serve others, certainly, but we're also supposed to honor God, Christ. The Lord's Supper is intended to honor Christ. So we end up thinking things. We take time, we quiet our hearts, we reflect on things like, you know, Jesus, I'm so unlike you. I'm not really worthy to be around you. If you were here in person, I would be tempted to shrink back from you because I'm so not worth it. But you initiated with me. You asked me here. You sacrificed so much to meet my greatest need. If it weren't for you, I would be condemned by God. This is how we honor Christ at communion. We reflect on what he's done. We reflect greatly on what he's done. We reflect forward to when he's coming back and looking forward to having a meal with him then. So anyone who eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord unworthily is guilty of sinning against the body and blood of the Lord. This is why you should examine yourself before eating the bread and drinking the cup. For if you eat the bread or drink the cup without honoring the body of Christ, you're eating and drinking God's judgment upon yourself. You can see where this paragraph would tempt you to ask about the details of how this ritual is supposed to go. If you miss the point, that it's to remember and to honor. And so if they're showing up and they're really doing their Lord's Supper a lot like the original one was done, they take a meal together. And at the end of the meal, they break bread and they pass the cup and they remember the Lord. That's what the Lord's Supper was. It doesn't have to be that way. It could be after a regular meal or it could be all by itself. It doesn't really matter. But because they showed up not with the desire to honor God and serve others, God saw this and he was beginning to react to it. God takes this matter seriously enough that he will discipline over it. Not because you drink the wine first and the bread later, the bread first and the wine later. Not because you have unconfessed sin. Not because you are eating crackers instead of bread. Not because, but because you show up to honor God and you're just pleasing yourself. And he goes on to say, that's why many of you are weak and sick. And some have even died. You're like, whoa. I didn't know it was that serious. Yet when we're judged by the Lord, so this isn't judgment to hell. This is discipline, so we will not be condemned along with the world, not condemned to hell. But why should we behave like the world does when it's so full of self-honor, so full of self-service? Let's not be like that. If you're weak here today, you're sick here today, or if you have someone who died today, the reverse isn't necessarily true. They're not weak or sick or dead because they've done something wrong. In this situation, Paul's discerning that some of these things have happened because they aren't coming together to honor the Lord. This is a very serious issue. Will you gather with the heart to love others and honor the Lord? This is the heart of it all. Religious formalism, as I've said, misses the point because it misses the purpose to honor Christ. Isn't it funny how we can have gatherings that are so horizontally focused that we forget him, the reason for the gathering? The one who created an environment so that we could gather? It's like what Isaiah says. You know, at the time of Isaiah, what was going on was there was a temple and sacrifices were being offered according to the law. And in the same temple, people were bowing down with their butts pointed toward the Holy of Holies to worship the starry host. And there's these phallic poles, Asherah poles, in the temple. And so they're honoring the goddess of fertility. And in the deep places in the temple, they had scrawled on the walls Egyptian images of crawling things that they were worshiping as well. And so they were doing both at the same time. And God is like, do you think I care about your sacrifices? These people say they're mine. They honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Their worship is nothing but man-made rules learned by rote. Because of this, I will once again astound these hypocrites with amazing wonders. You might think, oh, God's going to do a magic show. Cool. No, he's going to show up in judgment. If this is not your heart's desire, actually your taste for fellowship will dwindle. Let's reverse it. Is your taste for fellowship weak today? I guarantee it will be if your heart is not oriented toward honoring God and serving others. Your taste will be weak. You'll be like, I didn't get anything out of the meeting. Do you think the meeting was designed for you to get something out of it? It was designed for you to show up and honor the Lord. It was designed for you to show up and serve. This says a lot more about your heart than it says about the meeting. A lot more. Entire groups can become lifeless. They can diminish. And they can cease to be. Because we can get to the point where none of us really want to be together. We're not showing up to edify, to honor, and so none of us are edified. Maybe this is what Paul means in Ephesians chapter 4 when he talks about grieving the Spirit. Why do we not have the power of God here? Are you showing up with God's heart? Maybe you're grieving the Spirit and he's not empowering your time. Frankly, if a healthy portion of a group you associate with has this heart, it'll be fine. It'll be delightful. And don't forget, by the way, God has an enemy whose bent is to try to get you. There's never been a meeting ever that I thought to myself, I am so excited to go. Now, some of you are more gregarious. Great. I'm not gregarious. I feel drained by people. And I have an ally in God's enemy. And that ally whispers to me things about people that are unedifying and tells me how tired I am and promises me joy when I get back from this meeting, when I can just be by myself, sitting outside, staring at the stars. And so I'm thinking about being away from the meeting before I even show up at the meeting. You think I'm going to show up with a heart to honor God and delight in people? No, I will not. And I think, you know, we have to be aware of this. My wife and I frequently will have conflict on our way to our home church meeting. And she is much sharper than I am. And so she'll just start laughing. And I'm like, what are you laughing about? You're not taking me seriously. And she says, this is obviously Satan. And so I start laughing, and then we pray against the evil one, not only for ourselves, but for all of our friends who are probably getting the same effect. In our culture, we are happy. We're told that we will be happy when we get what we want. God tells us we'll be happy when we marvel at his love and try to care for other people. I think when you get older, my experience is this, you're happy to consign this good work to your calendar at a limited time. Tonight's home church. Okay, I can gear up for that. But the next day is mine. And so this certainly has to be your attitude at a meeting, but shouldn't it carry forward to your life where you're looking for opportunities to honor God and bless other people? How about that? I tried to kick your bottoms in 35 minutes. We look forward to the day we stand before you and everything that we failed to do or did badly is burned up. And the only thing that remains is the times we tried to honor you, the times we loved other people. Just thank you for that great day, that best eulogy of all times where nothing but good is remembered. Amen.